Hello, and welcome to the African American Hour. I'm Rosemary Onkwe, bringing you readings from the following publications: The Root, Andscape, The Griot, Ebony Exclusive, Blavity, The Beacon, Kansas City, The Associated Press, and The Voice. Today we'll begin our readings from an article titled, Kansas City Launches New Strategy to Stop Domestic Violence Before It Turns Deadly, by Bonita Gooch, BONITA GOOCH, The Voice, March 30th, 2026. Kansas City leaders are rolling out a new strategy to reduce domestic violence killings as cases tied to intimate partner violence surge across the city. In 2025, 1 in 3 homicides were related to domestic violence, compared to 1 in 12 in 2024, Jackson County Prosecutor Melissa Johnson said during a press conference announcing the initiative. That's a reality we are seeing firsthand, and it demands we act earlier, she said. The new effort, called the Intimate Partner Violence Intervention, IPV1, Focused Deterrent Program, is designed to stop violence before it escalates by identifying people at risk and intervening sooner. The program is a partnership between the City of Kansas City, the Kansas City Police Department, and Jackson County Prosecutor's Office, and several domestic violence service organizations. It is funded by a $400,000 grant from the Bloch, BLOCH, Family Foundation, awarded through the Police Foundation of Kansas City, along with $75,000 from the city's health department. Mayor Quentin Lucas said the goal is to break cycles of violence before lives are lost. Our goals here are very clear: reduce repeat harm, disrupt cycles of violence, and protect the safety and stability of families in Kansas City, Lucas said at the press conference. Unlike traditional approaches that respond after violence occurs, the IPVI program focuses on early intervention, accountability, and coordinated services. The model identifies individuals at risk of committing repeat violence and delivers a clear message: the abuser must stop, while also offering access to support services for both victims and those causing harm. Local domestic violence service organizations will play a central role in carrying out that work. Representatives from Newhouse, Synergy Services, Hope House, and the Maddie Rhodes Center will help connect survivors to safety planning, housing resources, counseling, and advocacy. These organizations bring deep expertise and trusted relationships within the community, Johnson said. Their involvement ensures this initiative remains survivor-centered and grounded in real-world experience. Lace Kline, C-L-I-N-E, Kansas City's Assistant City Manager for Public Safety, said the strategy builds on the city's Save KC program, which has already shown measurable success in reducing violence. That program helped reduce homicides by 40% between 2024 and 2025, and non-fatal shootings by 60%, she said. These results give us real confidence that a similar strategy can be effective in addressing intimate partner violence, Kline said during the press conference. Kline said one of the biggest challenges is that many domestic violence-related homicides involve people with little or no prior criminal history, which means we have to intervene earlier, before the patterns of violence take hold, she said, describing an approach that emphasizes clear communication, accountability, and access to services for both victims and those causing harm. Johnson said the initiative will take a dual approach, holding repeat offenders accountable while also working to prevent first-time offenders from escalating. We're committed to prosecuting to the fullest extent, Johnson said. At the same time, for first-time, lower-level defendants who are at risk of escalating, this program looks like flooding them with resources and enforcement messages before they become offenders we never want to see in our courtrooms. Police Chief Stacy Graves said the city has already seen some progress with domestic violence homicides dropping from 12 at this time last year to 2 so far this year. Still, she emphasizes the need for continued action. That's still 2 homicides, Graves said. City leaders say the new program brings together law enforcement, prosecutors, courts, and community organizations in a coordinated effort to prevent violence before it turns deadly. I want Kansas to hear our message, Graves said. No, we are a lifeline. We are working in the 3 pillars of prevention, intervention, and enforcement to stop intimate partner violence. This article was titled, Kansas City Launches New Strategy to Stop Domestic Violence Before It Turns Deadly, written by Bonita Gooch. The Voice, March 30th, 2026. Next, a special segment from News 4 Washington, titled, Who Are the Victims and Perpetrators of Most U.S. Murder Suicides? Here's the data. Written by Ted Oberg, O-B-E-R-G, and Maggie Moore, M-O-R-E, NBC Washington, digital editor. Published April 16, 2026. Murder suicides on average happen more than once a day somewhere in the United States, studies show. Who is most often involved? News 4 consulted 2 studies to look at the data on this kind of domestic violence, one from Columbia University and another from the Violence Policy Center in Washington, D.C. Those studies show that there are between 800 and 1,000 victims of murder suicides annually. They are most often committed by white men armed with guns, and the majority of people murdered are their significant others. Of the murder victims, 57% to 65% are the romantic or intimate partners of the person who died by suicide. The person committing the crime is a man, 92% of the time. More than 70% of the time, that man is white. Roughly 87% of the time, a gun is involved. News 4 didn't find statistics specifically linking murder suicides to divorce proceedings, but experts say that moments in ongoing divorces, when new papers are served or new court dates are set, can sometimes trigger violence in homes where abuse has happened before. That's the case, even if that previous abuse has not been physical. If there's any history of abuse, even if it's nonviolent, if it's verbal or coercive control, which is actually a red flag for lethal danger, any spouse in that situation should absolutely be aware that any steps towards separation, including litigation, are high risk, domestic violence lawyer Joan Meyer, M-E-I-E-R, said. Any of these process procedures in litigation could trigger violence, because if there's an abusive history, there's symbols to the victim getting out from under the abuse and getting out from under the control of the abuser, Mayer said. Whether a couple is married or dating, one of the most dangerous moments in an abusive relationship can be when someone tries to leave. That's part of what makes the case of former Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax so alarming. The details of what happened in their Annandale home before Fairfax County police say Justin shot and killed his wife, dentist Serena Fairfax, then himself, are unknown. But court records reviewed by News 4 show the couple were in the middle of separation and custody proceedings. Justin was 2 weeks from a court-ordered deadline to leave home, and Serena had been granted custody of their teen children. Very, very often, when couples, and particularly when a man is a highly accomplished and impressive human being, professionally accomplished and has a status in society, that's the last person we think of as being violent, Mayer said. And that's perhaps the last woman we think of as being at risk, and we need to get over that. We need to stop thinking that abuse and violence are only a risk at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, because that is not true, Mayer said. No matter who's involved, court dates, custody rulings, separation, and divorce filings can all raise the risk of domestic violence, especially where there is already a history of control, coercion, or other abuse. It's why Mayer says divorce lawyers need to strongly question their own clients about their safety. She adds that there are red flags that everyone can keep an eye out for when it comes to their loved ones. It's always better to say something, however awkward, than to say nothing for fear of being disrespectful. I think it's tricky because no one wants to sort of say, "Hey, are you abused?" to someone they know and respect and care for, Mayer says. The kind of thing one can say without being offensive is to say, "Do you feel safe at home? Is there anything that worries you about moving forward with this divorce?" Mayer said. Those kinds of questions are not offensive. Conversely, using words like abused or asking directly if there is domestic violence can be off-putting to someone at risk, Mayer explained. But you can ask about feeling safe, Mayer said. You can ask about worry. You can ask about, why are you staying in the same house? Do you think it would be safer if you weren't? If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline by calling 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233. Visiting www.thehotline.org or texting LOVE IS to 22522. This article was titled, "Who are the victims and perpetrators of most U.S. murder-suicides? Here's the data." Written by Ted Oberg and Maggie Moore, NBC Washington, April 16, 2026. The next article is from The Beacon, Kansas City, and is titled, "Kansas City Public Schools Making Stride in Graduation Rates." Written by Kansas City Documenters, April 13, 2026. Kanye Griffin, Connye. These notes were produced through Kansas City Documenters, which trains and pays community members to take fact-checked notes at public meetings, strengthening transparency and accountability in local government. Summary. A student from Lincoln College Preparatory Academy made a presentation about the Student District Advisory Council, SDAC. KCPS administrators briefed school board members on counseling and school leadership initiatives that have helped improve the district's graduation rate. Board members expressed support for the progress in achieving goals and meeting technology challenges. SDAC update. The SDAC gives students an opportunity to provide perspectives and guidance as KCPS develops solutions, programs, and services. The Council provides opportunities for students to share issues and ideas to make KCPS a better place for students and staff. The Council also works on projects that will benefit all students throughout the district. Chase Minton, M-I-N-T-O-N, a junior at Lincoln College Preparatory Academy, provided an overview of the SDAC. Minton explained, "The SDAC uses a program called Satchel Pulse to gather data from across the district and uses the information to focus on the issues of greatest concern to students. In the current year, bullying was reported as a problem. SDAC developed a resource guide to help students report and learn about de-escalating methods." Minton acknowledged that each school may not have access to the same opportunities, so SDAC is seeking ways to collaborate and to amplify its message. Deputy Superintendent Davis noted some recent district achievements, including the return of musical theater at East High School. The school acquired tools and sewing machines so that students could make costumes and sets. Graduation Policy Monitoring. Part 1, School Counseling. In reviewing programs the district is using to improve student achievement, Guidance and Counseling Director Powell noted the district's graduation rate increased from 72.2% to 88.6% between the 2022 and 2025 school years. She further broke out student achievement in different categories, including gender, race, student type, and types of courses taken. She said the counseling department uses graduation audit teams to review students' progress, collaborate to prepare the intervention plans and or individualize success plans, and conduct regular monitoring. Challenges the counseling department faces are the 177 undercredit senior transfers who came to the district between August 2025 and March 2026, and delays in receiving records from the prior school. Part 2, School Leadership. School Improvement Officer Ervin, E-R-V-I-N, emphasized the importance of early interventions. He noted research stating that ninth graders who pass all core classes are 3.5% more likely to graduate than those who fail just one. Echoing the report from the counseling department, Ervin stressed the use of data to assess individual progress and the effectiveness of intervention plans. He noted the district's graduation rate of 88.6% is about 3 percentage points below the state average of 91.5%. He told the board in response to its request for clarification that the counselors rely on grades posted and the numbers of credits earned to screen for on-track or off-track. In response to other board questions, administrators acknowledged the need to define college and career ready more specifically and said an academic success contract, individualized intervention plan, generally involves checking in with a counselor and or the building graduation coach who guides the student to success. This year, the district projects that 21 students will not graduate, down from 42 last year. Chief Technology Officer Jones reviewed upgrades, including replacing the phone and intercom system, and discussed student technology pathways towards earning information technology certifications and pursuing technology career paths. Board members praised those developments. Noting that students' achievements improve with access to technology, Jones explained the hardware made available to all students and planned updates. The district will transition from iPads to Apple Neos, N-E-O-S, for secondary school and MacBooks for teachers and staff. He noted more professional development will be needed so staff can take advantage of all that a MacBook offers. He stressed that student input regarding keypads was the reason for moving away from iPads to Neos. Jones said the next steps in technology include improving uninterrupted power supply, assessing the usefulness of device insurance, upgrading to 30 gigabyte internet speed, implementing an artificial intelligent AI policy that ensures safe, secure, and educational use of AI, while adhering to privacy laws and accessing only approved tools without supplanting critical thinking, instruction, or authentic student work. This article was titled, Kansas City Public Schools Making Strides in Graduation Rate, by The Beacon, Kansas City, April 13, 2026. The next article is from Blavity Health and is titled, Is Your Joint Pain Actually a Bone Spur? By Dr. Diana Rangaves, R-A-N-G-A-V-E-S, April 17, 2026. A bone spur is a smooth, hard, bony growth that develops over a long period. While the word spur might sound sharp, these are actually rounded projections that often feel like a small, immovable pebble under your skin. The most frequent appear near joints such as the knees, hips, or spine, where the body is trying to repair itself. When cartilage wears down due to age or osteoarthritis, your body compensates by growing extra bone to increase the joint's surface area and provide greater stability. While many bone spurs are painless and go unnoticed, they become problematic when they press against nerves or restrict movement. For instance, a spur in the spinal column can narrow the space intended for the spinal cord, causing a pinched nerve. This often manifests as a radiating ache, weakness, or pins and needles sensation in the arms and legs. To accurately identify these growths, medical professionals rely on diagnostic imaging, such as X-rays or CT scans, which reveal the exact size and location of the spur. What is a bone spur? The official medical name for a bone spur is an osteophyte, O-S-T-E-O-P-H-Y-T-E, as explained by the Cleveland Clinic. Healthcare professionals see them all the time on X-ray pictures. To understand what they are, imagine your bones are like building blocks. Sometimes your body decides to add a little bit of extra cement to the side of a block. The extra cement is the bone spur. According to the Mayo Clinic, most bone spurs cause absolutely zero pain. You might live your whole life with a bone spur on your spine, your knee, or your foot and never feel it. They only become a problem when this extra piece of bone grows too large and starts to rub against a nearby nerve or bone. When the extra bone gets in the way, that is when it starts to hurt. What's happening in your body? Think of your body as a finely tuned machine, much like a door hinge that requires a little bit of oil to stay quiet and smooth. In your joints, that oil is actually a soft, slippery cushion known as cartilage. According to Cleveland Clinic, this cartilage sits at the ends of your bones to allow them to glide effortlessly against one another when you walk, run, or bend. It acts as a vital buffer, keeping your skeletal system moving without friction. Over time, however, this protective padding can wear down due to the natural aging process or years of high-impact sports. When that cushion thins out, your bones begin to rub directly against each other. In a clever attempt to repair the weakened area, your body tries to protect it by growing a new bone. While your body's intentions are good, it doesn't always place this extra growth in a helpful spot. This well-meaning but misplaced patch is what we call a bone spur, which often ends up causing the very aches and discomforts it's trying to prevent. Causes of bone spurs. Your body never builds extra bone without a good reason. It is usually responding to a specific need or physical stress. The most common culprit is osteoarthritis. While that sounds like a complicated medical term, it simply describes the natural process by which your joint cushions or cartilage wear down as you age. While this protective padding wears away, your body shifts into repair mode, rushing to build extra bone to stabilize and support the affected area. Beyond the natural aging process, repetitive physical activity can also trigger these growths. According to research in PubMed Central, athletes such as runners and dancers often develop spurs on their heels due to the constant rhythmic pounding of their feet against hard surfaces. In an effort to make the heel thicker and more resilient against this impact, the body adds more bone as a defense measure. Similarly, wearing shoes that are too tight can create excessive pressure on your toes, prompting your body to grow extra bone to shield itself from the squeeze. Finally, lifestyle habits play a significant role in how quickly these spurs might develop. Harvard Health publishing that carrying excess weight or following a diet lacking essential nutrients can put surprisingly additional stress on your knees and feet. This increased load forces your body to adapt more rapidly to the pressure, often leading to the formation of bone spurs as it struggles to support the extra weight and maintain your mobility. Health risks and complications. Dr. Justus Rabach, R-A-B-A-C-H, M.D., explains, "Even though a bone spur is just smooth bone, it can cause some big problems if it grows in the wrong place. The biggest risk is pinching a nerve. Nerves are like tiny electrical wires that run all over your body. Imagine stepping on a garden hose. The water cannot flow through the hose when you step on it. A bone spur can step on a nerve in your back or your neck." The Mayo Clinic warns that a pinched nerve can cause numbness, tingling, or weakness in your arms and legs. Another problem is that bone spurs can interfere with your normal movement. If a big spur grows inside your knee, it might act like a doorstop. It can make your knee feel stuck so that you cannot bend your leg all the way back. It can also tear the tendons that attach your muscles to your bones, making it very painful to walk or lift heavy things. What to do about bone spurs? The very best thing you can do while facing a bone spur is to give your body a long rest. If running makes your heel spur hurt, stop running for a few weeks. Try swimming or riding a bike instead, since those activities don't pound your feet on hard ground. You can also put an ice pack on the painful bump for 15 minutes a day. The ice helps reduce heat and swelling and makes the pain from rubbing feel much better. If your pain is bad, you may be able to take over-the-counter medicine like ibuprofen. This medicine helps calm down the angry, swollen areas around the bone spur. If you have a bone spur on your heel, the easiest way to feel better is to check your shoes. Take your favorite sneakers and try to bend them in half. If they bend super easily in the middle, like a piece of paper, they're not protecting your feet. You need to buy shoes with a thick, stiff sole to protect your heel from hitting hard ground. When to see a doctor? Most bone spurs will stop hurting if you rest and wear better shoes. But if the pain is so bad that you cannot walk or sleep at night, it's time to call an expert. You also must see a doctor right away if your fingers or toes feel numb, tingly, or completely weak. This means the bone spur is crushing a nerve wire very badly, and a doctor needs to take an x-ray of your bones to see exactly what is happening inside your body. Bone spurs in the hand can be secondary to several causes and can result in pain and limited functionality. It's important to meet with your healthcare provider for a full workup and treatment, says Anita Chandraskaran, Chandraskaran, M.D., a board-certified internal medicine and rheumatology specialist who currently works as a rheumatologist at Hartford Healthcare Medical Group in Connecticut. How do doctors remove bone spurs? While rest and physical therapy often do the trick, sometimes a bone spur can press against a nerve so firmly that it causes numbness or severe pain. In these more serious cases, a medical expert may suggest a specialized surgery to remove the growth and restore your comfort. The process is designed to be as smooth as possible, you will be placed under anesthesia so you can sleep through the entire procedure without feeling any sensation. During the operation, the surgeon makes a very small incision to precisely reach the spur. Using specialized miniature tools, the doctor carefully shaves or trims the excess bone bump until the bone surface is smooth again. This effectively unblocks the area, giving your nerves the space they need to function properly. Once the surgery is complete and the pressure is relieved, the pain and numbness typically fade away, allowing your body to move freely once more. What happens if bone spurs are left untreated? If you happen to have a bone spur that isn't causing any discomfort, the good news is that you can generally leave it alone. These silent spurs are often harmless, and your body can continue functioning perfectly fine without any intervention. However, if a bone spur is already painful, ignoring it can lead to more serious complications, as your body continues its well-meaning but misguided construction project. Left untreated, a painful bone spur may continue to grow larger over time. While these growths occur in high-traffic areas like your knees or spine, they can cause the joint to become incredibly stiff, eventually making it difficult to stand up straight or walk long distances. Beyond mechanical stiffness, constant friction between the spur and surrounding tissue can lead to chronic swelling and inflammation, making daily life feel quite miserable. Addressing the pain early with rest and proper treatment is the best way to protect your mobility and keep the problem from escalating. Bottom line, a bone spur is a small, smooth bump of extra bone that your body builds to protect a weak or rubbing joint. While most bone spurs never cause any pain, they can sometimes pinch your nerves or make your joints feel stiff. By wearing supportive shoes, resting your body, and using ice, you can easily stop the pain and keep your bones feeling happy and healthy. This article was titled, "Is Your Joint Pain Actually a Bone Spur?" by Diana Rangavis, Blavity Health, April 17, 2026. The next article is titled, "Maryland Lawmakers and Advocates Celebrate Passage of State Voting Rights Act. History Was Made," by Maya Bodie, B-O-D-D-I-E, Blavity, April 16, 2026. Maryland lawmakers passed sweeping voting rights legislation Monday night, marking a significant expansion of protections for voters of color and setting the stage for the measure to be signed into law by Governor Wes Moore. The Maryland Voting Rights Act, approved April 13th, is designed to prohibit discriminatory election practices and strengthen access to the ballot, particularly for Black, Indigenous, and other voters of color. Advocates say the legislation builds on the Federal Voting Rights Act of 1965, while responding to what they describe as a steady erosion of those protections at the national level. How history was made for voting rights. History was made in Annapolis last night as Maryland lawmakers and advocates secured the passage of a key piece of Maryland Voting Rights Act package. Janai Nelson, President and Director Counsel of the Legal Defense Fund, said in an exclusive interview with Blavity. The critical legislation will finally provide essential protections to ensure Black voters aren't silenced by discriminatory district maps or election systems at the local level in Maryland, Nelson added. With this momentous victory, the Free State is living up to its moniker, creating a pathway for a truly multiracial and representative democracy to thrive in Maryland. The Legal Defense Fund played a key role in supporting the legislation, working alongside state lawmakers and advocacy groups as part of a broader coalition pushing for the bill's passage. Protecting voters of color. According to Common Cause Maryland, the act ensures that all voters can cast meaningful ballots and participate free and fairly in the democratic process, particularly communities that have historically faced barriers to voting. At its core, the Maryland Voting Rights Act targets practices known as racial vote dilution, systems or policies that weaken the ability of voters of color to elect candidates of their choice. In earlier advocacy around the bill, the Legal Defense Fund explained in a February Substack post that Senate Bill 255 and its companion, House Bill 350, aim to address these inequities at the local level. The bills were sponsored by State Senator Charles Sidnor and Delegate Greg Wims, W-I-M-S, combating voting rights attacks at the federal level. Civil rights advocates say the need for state-level protections has become more urgent amid shifts in federal enforcement. In a 2024 report, ACLU of Maryland warned that local election systems across Maryland continue to dilute the voting strength of Black, Indigenous, and other voters of color, arguing that the state must act proactively as federal safeguards face increasing uncertainty. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund has also pointed to ongoing legal battles at the federal level. In recent weeks, the organization joined a coalition of civil rights groups suing over a Trump administration executive order aimed at redistricting mail-in voting, arguing that it could disenfranchise eligible voters and overstep federal authority. With this kind of legislation, efforts to enshrine protections at the state level can persist regardless of possible federal changes. The push for expanded voting protections has also intersected with broader conversations about disenfranchisement. In a Baltimore Beat op-ed published in March, Erica Lewis and Rihanna Mukherjee highlighted disparities affecting incarcerated individuals, noting that Black Marylanders are disproportionately impacted by laws that limit voting rights. If signed into law, Maryland will join a growing number of states adopting their own voting rights acts, like Colorado last year and Minnesota in 2024, which represents the enduring fight to uphold democracy amid federal efforts to completely undermine the right to vote. This article was another one from Blavity, titled Maryland Lawmakers and Advocates Celebrate Passage of State Voting Rights Act. History Was Made, by Maya Brody, Blavity, April 16, 2026. The next article is from The Griot and is titled Rihanna Makes History Again by Breaking RIAA Singles Certification Record, by Nhari Dijan, Nhari Dijan, April 16, 2026. Rihanna gave us her last album a decade ago, but she's still breaking music records. She is now the first female artist in the history of the Recording Industry of America, RIAA, to have over 200 million singles certifications. With 200.5 million single certification to be exact, the 38-year-old singer and entrepreneur is the third-ranking musical artist on the association's all-time digital singles units list, behind Drake, who has 277.5 million units, and Morgan Wallen's 215 million units. RIAA defines one unit as either one permanent digital download or 150 on-demand audio and or video streams to qualify for certification. Last December, Ri also hit another musical milestone when Billboard announced that her eighth and most recent studio album, ANTI, had spent 500 weeks on the Billboard 200, the first Black woman in history to achieve this. "God ain't forget about me," she said at the time, celebrating the moment. Rihanna also released the Certified Sextuple Platinum album, Anti, in 2016, which brought us hits like Needed Me, Work, and Love on the Brain. Since then, the beauty mogul has become a billionaire, storming the business world with her cosmetics company, Fenty Beauty, and lingerie brand, Savage X Fenty. And she's had 3 children with her long-term partner, rapper ASAP Rocky. The Bajan artist has given us a song here and there since Anti, and has said over the years that a 9th album is coming, telling Harper's Bazaar in 2025 that her next project is not going to be anything that anybody expects. She also teased fans earlier this year with an Instagram post of her in the studio, though no word yet as to when we'll hear the final product, named R9 by fans, that she has been reportedly mulling over for these past few years. But until then, this new accomplishment shows that Rihanna lovers are still savoring the tracks that have shaped our sound for the last 20 years. This article was titled, Rihanna Makes History Again by Breaking RIAA Singles Certification Record, by Inhari Dijon, The Griot, April 16, 2026. The next article is titled, Why Black Women Continue to Defend Meghan Markle Despite the Online Trolls, written by Chanel Jenai, The Root, April 17, 2026. It's no secret that Meghan Markle has dealt with more than her fair share of online hate and bullying. Now she's opening up about how all the negative digital discourse affected her and how it's impacting young folks today. Not long after the announcement that Prince Harry would be marrying Markle, the internet exploded. A myriad of racist people were severely and swiftly irate at the impending nuptials. In addition to the online bullying, she was also subjected to rough treatment from the royal family. In fact, things were so bad that in a March 2021 interview with Oprah Winfrey, Markle revealed that amidst all the emotional turmoil and pressure, she had once felt like she just didn't want to be alive anymore. In March 2024, she told a SXSW audience that she experienced the bulk of bullying and abuse while she was pregnant with both her kids, Archie 6 and Lilbeth 4. And that's exactly why she was able to deliver a powerful message about the dangers of online bullying and trolls to students from Australia's Swinburne University of Technology recently. 10 years, every day for 10 years, I have been bullied and attacked, according to Reuters. And I was the most trolled person in the entire world, man or woman. Now I'm still here. She continued, when I think of all of you and what you're experiencing, I think so much of that is having to realize that you know that industry, that billion-dollar industry, that is completely anchored and predicated on cruelty to get clicks. That's not going to change, so you have to be stronger than that. However, if there ever comes a time when the Duchess of Sussex can't rely on her own strength, she has a whole slew of black women online who are determined to stand for her and have her back. If you don't believe us, take a look at what more than a handful of black women had to say in March 2025 when Markle released her Netflix show With Love, Meghan. When negative Nancys were trying their hardest to talk crap about the show, black women called out viewers for their undercover jealousy and racist feelings. This is what the girls want to see. It's called aspirational television, one user said on TikTok at the time. Y'all mad because she's got her staff running around doing things? You can't take that a black woman, a biracial woman, is having stuff. They will never accept Meghan, no matter what she does, because she's living the fairy tale they once dreamed of. Except the prince chose to marry a black woman, another user wrote on TikTok then. And even when Markle admitted to being severely trolled, it was black women, once again, who were affirming her experience. The hounding has been disgraceful and has gone on for too long, and it needs to stop. What are they aiming to achieve? Bully her till she's 6 foot under? Then move on to the next person and bully and torment. I blame all this mainly on the gutter press. They're the ones, said one black woman on X Twitter. Another added on TikTok, Megan, keep going. You are loved. Mukhtar wrote, it is well documented that Meghan Markle was bullied, trolled, and attacked every day for 10 years. Piers Morgan is one example. He used to bully her almost every morning on Good Morning Britain. He lost his job because of it. Why black women continue to defend Meghan Markle despite the online trolls. Written by Chanel Jenai, The Root, April 17th, 2026. The next article is from Ebony and is titled, The Biggest Movies of 2026 That Are Worth Your Watch, by Malik Piay, P-E-A-Y, January 14th, 2026. Rom-coms, psychological thrillers, wild cards, and long-awaited sequels define a 2026 movie slate that blends nostalgia, black storytelling, and big-screen spectacle. Movies coming out of Hollywood in 2026 serve up nostalgia, black joy, and psychological thrills, all with a twist that speaks to us. Acclaimed creatives like Boots Riley, Sorry to Bother You, and Antoine Fuqua, Training Day, both return to the big screen with releases this spring. Romantic comedies and personal dramas abound, while laughs and scares go hand in hand in the Wayans' latest Scary Movie 6. The year also delivers on franchises from The Hunger Games to Jumanji, and more all return to play. And then there are the wild cards, like Moses in Black and the Curtis 50 Cent Jackson produced film is a modern day biblical retelling of the story of the Ethiopian martyr, famous from his dramatic conversion from ruthless bandit to a revered saint known for humility, wisdom, and death. Grab your calendar and mark these dates for films that are worth your time this year. Mother Mary, March 20th. Michaela Coel, C-O-E-L, plays a bewitched stylist to a diva, Anna Hathaway, who needs that dress. But the cost is more than just blood, sweat, and tears in this thriller, which exposes the intense relationship creatives have with the superstars they craft. F.K.A. Twigs and Hunter Schafer also star. Is God Is, May 15th. Twins take over Hollywood again in Is God Is. Janelle Monáe plays twin sisters who suffer from permanent burn scars. Their vengeful mother orders her daughters to kill their abusive father, who caused their wounds. Vivica Fox and Erica Alexander star alongside this exciting lineup performers in director Alicia Harris's first feature film. I Love Boosters, May 22nd. Riley's offbeat film follows a team of shoplifters who want to overthrow the secrets of a fashion corporate hegemony. K.K. Palmer, Naomi Ackie, Taylor Page, Demi Moore, and more star in this thrilling sci-fi feature, along with Lakeith Stanfield, who is re-teaming with Riley since the brilliantly warped Sorry to Bother You. Black Love Unfiltered, the drama, April 3rd. Zendaya thought she was ready to get married, but her soon-to-be husband, played by Robert Pattinson, gives her apparent cold feet in this dark romantic comedy. It's an intimate exploration of a young couple's uncertainty about their future together. You, Me, and Tuscany, April 10th. Halle Bailey whisks off to Europe to find her would-be Italian lover, who materializes in the form of British cousin Regé Jean Page. R-E-G-E J-E-A-N. It's a Tuscan romantic comedy with eat, pray, love vibes, so we can all get caught up in this foreign love affair. All about the sequel, Scary Movie 6, June 12th. It's the screen we can get behind. The entire original comedy ensemble, including Regina Hall, Marlon Wayans, and Sean Wayans, return to deliver unflinching jokes and mischief. And since we're in a whole new era, this 2026 retelling is poking fun at some of the biggest horror tropes of the decade. The Odyssey, July 27th. Christopher Nolan's follow-up to Oppenheimer transforms verses from the epic poem into magnificent cinematic scenery. Zendaya stars as the divine goddess, Athena, in this incredulous journey for ancient soldiers to make their way home. Spider-Man, Brand New Day, July 31st. Peter Parker wants to retire his superhero suit and live a normal life with MJ. But it will be anything but ordinary as the rumored engaged couple, Tom Holland and Zendaya, return to the screen in this supernatural love story. The Hunger Games, Sunrise on the Reaping, November 20th. Finally, we'll learn how Haymitch Abernathy survived the 50th annual Hunger Games with double the contestants and bear witness to his love for Lenore Dove Baird, played by Whitney Peak. Jumanji 4, December 11th. Dwayne Johnson and Jack Black return in this fourth installment. The new Jumanji franchise follows the board game characters' adventures into the unknown as they risk their lives, time, and time, and time again for play. Dune Part 3, December 18th. The latest installment of this sci-fi odyssey will focus on Paul Atreides, A-T-R-E-I-D-E-S, ascension to the spiritual title of Muad'Dib. Zendaya plays the Fremen warrior, Chani, C-H-A-N-I, who must protect and do good for her people, even as her love interest falls victim to the all-powerful forces of an ancient prophecy. Avengers, Doomsday, December 18th. Ready for the sixth phase of the MCU? Robert Downey Jr. has switched sides and now embodies mega supervillain Dr. Doom. Thank goodness Wakanda's Black Panther, Letitia Wright, and M'Baku, M-B-A-K-U, Winston Duke, will once again be fighting on the side of good. The Wild Cards, Moses the Black, January 30th. The biggest movies of 2026 that are worth your watch. By Malik Pey, P-E-A-Y, January 14th, 2026. Next, another article from Ebony titled Sustainability Power Players. Ashley Kimone, C-I-M-O-N-E, and Moya Anise, M-O-Y-A, A-N-N-E-C-E, founders of Asia Make Bags for the Sophisticated Eco-Conscious World Traveler by Victor Q. Unell Vaughns, April 26, 2026. When you're a devoted world traveler, you know what and what not to carry with you. Large bags are not always comfortable or smart to lug around in the States or abroad. They are a burden to carry, and they make you easy targets for plucky pickpockets. Ebony cover star Ashley Kimone and Moya Anise are the founders behind the popular eco-friendly bag line Ashya, A-S-H-Y-A. Founded in 2017, the Lux Accessories brand was created after the pair made a trip to South India together. The friends met while in college at the Fashion Institute of Technology and decided to go into business with one another after separately working at different fashion companies. As savvy world travelers, the design duo decided the first release from their Brooklyn-based line would be a chic take on the practical belt bag, which ended up being an immediate hit with the jet set and fashion community. Ever mindful of the ecosystem, the designers craft their sleek, streamlined bags using pieces of vegetable tanned leather. They also produce their collections in small quantities to limit excess waste. Some of the bags they have are Ashia Heritage Multibag, Slingback Mini Bag, Heritage Checker Bolo Bag, and Ashia Bolo Bag, Berry Croc. And they range in prices from $485 to $1,050. This article was titled Sustainability Power Players, Ashley Kimone and Moya Anise, founders of Ashia, make bags for the sophisticated, eco-conscious world traveler, by Victor Quinuel Vaughns, Jr., Ebony, April 26, 2026. Next, an article from Anscape, titled, New Denver Broncos RB Jonah Coleman, Eager to Show NFL His Worth, written by Eric Horn, H-O-R-N-E, and Scape, April 25th, 2026. From youth football through high school and college, opponents often praise running back Jonah Coleman for his competitiveness. Now in the NFL, Coleman has no plans to ease off the accelerator. Drafted by the Denver Broncos on Saturday in the fourth round, 108th overall, of the NFL's signature off-season event, the former standout in Arizona and Washington is eager to show the league both how hard he works and how hard he runs. He'll get his chance soon, just perhaps not soon enough for Coleman. I'm ready to go right now, the powerful runner said in a phone interview recently. If the season started tomorrow, I'd be ready. That's just my approach. Always work hard and always be ready. That's my way. Coleman's approach has served him well. As a sophomore in Arizona, Coleman averaged an impressive 6.8 yards per carry while leading the team with 871 rushing yards and scoring 6 touchdowns, 5 rushing. He helped the Wildcats improve to 10-3 after they went 5-7 during his freshman season. After transferring to Washington for his junior season, Coleman continued to thrive, rushing for a personal best 1,053 yards with a 5.5 yard per carry average and 10 touchdowns. His senior season was a smashing success. Coleman led the Huskies with 17 touchdowns, 15 rushing, and 758 rushing yards while averaging 4.9 yards per rush. Washington improved from 6-7 to 9-4. Along the way, Coleman received many pats on the back for his aggressive running style. I mean, pretty much for as long as I remember, every team we've played, defensive guys or opposing coaches, have come up to me after games, he said. They give me props for the way I play. Reflecting on his time at Arizona and Washington, Coleman took pride in being a catalyst for positive change. I felt like I helped leave both places better than I found them, he said. And that starts with being a great person, a great teammate, who people can rely on. It's also about someone who sets the standard. And from there, just being able to live by that and having integrity. New Denver Broncos RB Jonah Coleman, Eager to Show NFL His Worth. Written by Eric Horn, H-O-R-N-E, and Scape, April 25th, 2026. That's all the time we have for the African American Hour. My name is Rosemary Onkwe. Thanks for joining me.